This episode is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank, the nation's number one sperm bank. Use code QUEERFAM for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog and make those babies, y'all. Make those babies.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast. It's a bonus episode, y'all, and this is the show all about family, but with gay. The show whose mission is to uplift, highlight, normalize, and celebrate LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities, because you know what? We deserve it, and not enough people do it. So I'm here trying to lift y'all up and show the world how gorgeous we are. And this episode does not disappoint on that. In this bonus episode, I had the pleasure a while back of being interviewed on a little podcast called Gaytriarchs. And the hosts, Gavin and David, are two gay dads. They're not together. They're just gay dads and friends. And they just sit down and just kind of like chat about parenting as queer people up in these straight streets, so to speak. There's a lot they have. It's full of laughter. It's a fun show. And when I sat down with them, we talked about all things parenting and being queer and all the stuff that goes with it. And we had a lot of laughs. So I really think you're going to love this little bonus episode that I'm throwing at ya. But before I roll the tape, or before Helen rolls the tape, I'm going to talk about something that has been bugging me lately. You know, as you all know, I've been working really hard to monetize this show, and I still, everything I make on this show, including all of you lovely, beautiful Patreoners who support it out of your own pockets, goes right back into producing the show. I don't put any money in my pocket from this show. People tell me I shouldn't tell folks that, but it's true, and I don't. And I do this because I love it and because I believe in it wholeheartedly. Would I like to make money doing it? Hell yes, but I'm not there yet. I get a lot of outreach from PR agents. So this is clearly like these agents are reaching out to me on behalf of their clients who have paid them to reach out to me to come on my show because they want to get in front of my, I'm assuming, mainly queer audience of parents or hopeful parents. And so it's all, you know, it's always clients that could align with us. And, you know, a lot of times they're not gay, a lot of times, and they want to like push their products. And when I say, you know, oh, well, you're not really a great fit because we like to make sure our guests identify as LGBTQIA or are strong allies, you know, but, you know, we do have sponsorship rates. Please feel free to take a look at them. Please feel free to sponsor us in any way. We can work with you. And 20 times out of 20, I hear back, oh, they don't have a budget. But they are paying a PR agent. They are paying. So anyway, this is just my long-winded way. I'm like annoyed. I'm annoyed. I'm so annoyed. This one woman like pretended she was going to sponsor the show and had me get a meeting with her, and then had the nerve to say, oh, I just want to be on your show, or I want to collaborate with you. Like free, they want free advertising. And I'm not going to do that. I feel very strongly about protecting my audience, protecting all of you who tune in time after time again, because you want to hear these stories, not because you want to hear about, you know, I'm not even going to say what the companies are because I don't want to give them airtime. But it's like, it feels gross to me. It feels gross. And then when I say, oh, you can sponsor the show, and then I'll happily talk about how you're supporting the LGBTQIA community and you're helping something that is really trying to sustain and help this community thrive. That's huge. They never want to do it though. So I'm feeling some type of way, as the kids say, I'm feeling mighty salty about that. And I don't understand why it is so hard to get real sponsorships. Like, put your money where your mouth is. Come on, folks, let's go. And I'm telling y'all this because I feel like you're my friends. And so I hope this doesn't come off as gross, or I hope I don't, it's not off-putting to you, but it just from, you know, one queer lady out here trying to make a difference to all of you, these are the struggles. And It's annoying. I even texted my good friend, Rosie O'Donnell. I have her number and I text her a lot. Sometimes she texts me back. But I even texted her and I was like, how do you do this business? How do you do it in this business? And she actually wrote me back. She said, it is really frustrating. You're right. So even Rosie O'Donnell says it's frustrating. Not for the same reasons, because that's all. Then I wrote another text and she didn't respond to that one. So like BFFs, like faux real BFFs, me and Rosie. Not really. I wish. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. If y'all know of any brands that really, really do have advertising funds and they want to show up for the queer community in an authentic way, send them my way. Could you? Would you? Please? Because I need a sponsor for next season now. And don't forget, you can always join Patreon. Now, probably I'm going to lose a lot of Patreoners because of bitching about the lack of money, but I appreciate all of you who do give what you can. It means the world to me. And if you want to support me yourselves, you have a little extra change in your pockets, you can go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast and support me there. I hate asking y'all for money though. I really do. So as soon as I don't have to, I won't. anymore. Before I roll the tape, don't forget California Cryobank. The code is not going to be working for much longer. So you're going to use code QUEERFAM to go buy yourself some sperm if you're in the market for sperm. If you want to make some babies the gay way, or if you just want to buy some sperm, I don't know, who am I to judge? They are the number one sperm bank in the US. They ship to over 40 countries. And for the past 40 years and counting, they have helped tens of thousands of LGBTQIA plus folks build the families of their dreams, including myself, including many folks who've been on this show. So, and they also do have one of the most diverse selections of sperm donors out there, which is really also very important. You're going to go to cryobank.com. You're going to use code QUEERFAM, and you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog, where you can see all the information about the donors. And you can also use that code QUEERFAM for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. So if you're really serious about this, and if you've been thinking, oh, I should use that code, I should start doing this, now's your call. Do it now, because I'm not going to have this code much longer. Anyway, I love y'all. I'm going to have Helen and Nicole and Beulah roll the tape of the Gaytriarchs. I hope you enjoy it. Have some laughs. And just a couple more weeks before season 16 begins. Y'all, get ready because we got some good episodes coming at you. Really good ones. Okay, I love you. Mwah. Thank you for tuning in. And I'm sorry I vented so much, but I had to get it off my chest. Now I feel much better. I'm still salty, but I'm feeling a little better. All right, Helen, Beulah, Nicole. Roll that tape, please.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
So this week's top take a shot of coffee.
So this
and this is Gaytriarchs.
So recently I was adulting hard. I went to a conference that was unrelated to parenting and unrelated to being gay, frankly, although it was arts advocacy. So, you know,
that's pretty gay.
Yeah. Gay adjacent. Actually, yeah. I would say that the percentage of breeders to non-breeders was actually pretty balanced. But anyway,
we might have to change that. We might have to change our slur for straight people, because not a lot of straight people are not having kids anymore. They're not interested. True. So we got to figure out another way to disparage an entire community of people. Work on that, okay?
No offense, straights. Anyway, so I was at a dinner, and of course, we were all kind of like trying not to talk about work. And then, of course, the people who are parents find each other and start talking about parenting.
Complaining about their children, yeah.
And then the rest of the table is like, oh God, parents talking about the kids, right? So anyway, my daughter was having a birthday coming up soon. And I was talking about how our birthday party was to go to the mall to let the girls walk around like preteens with And the request was to have my cell phone and my Starbucks in hand. Mm-hmm. And they were looking like straight out of the poster of Mean Girls. I'll come back to the birthday party another time, frankly. But it was highly consumerist and capitalist.
Your favorite.
Anyway, my two favorite things being the anti-capitalist that I sometimes am. So anyway, point being, I'm sitting there talking to this woman who said, you know what, in our neighborhood, she had a seven-year-old. In our community, we've all agreed not to give gifts at birthday parties. And mm-hmm. I'm like, excuse me? She said, yeah, we don't. We have a book exchange instead at birthday parties. I'm like, what utopian communist mm-hmm. commune mm-hmm. in the middle of California are you living in? She's like, well, I mean, outside of Boston. I'm like, okay, that fits. Yeah. And she said, I'm like, did you start this? She said, no, it's been going on for years. We just don't do gifts. I'm like, I wish I had thought about this, and I wish I were part of this community, that's for sure. I'm amazed by it. Like, do you think you could get away with that?
We tried it with our son's second birthday. We said, with the invites, when they confirmed, we said, great, no gifts are allowed. Please just bring yourself. About 50% of the people brought gifts, and it is suffocating. Yeah.
But it does feel like the expectations are there. Like, the kids grow up knowing that they get gifts for their birthday, right? I mean, but we have talked about in the past that, like, it would be so much better if everybody just gave me $15 and then we had enough money to buy a swing set or something.
Sure.
Anyway, so then this woman went on to make me feel like an asshole, a consumerist capitalist pig, when she's like, well, we set up for my children. They're allowed to ask for four things: something they need, something they want, something to read, and something that they can wear. And I'm like, if you saw my kid's birthday list, where she's like, as the list unrolls mm-hmm. and hits the ground and rolls across the kitchen floor. Yeah. I mean, damn, I went off the rails way too early. And I hope that somebody out there like you, David, and the generations of your ilk of children mm-hmm. can change this, because it needs to change.
Yeah, no, I'm totally into it. So this morning I just had one of those. So I spent the weekend in Florida with my son, and we had this just daddy son trip, and it was so fun. And we went to grandma's house. It was so fun. It was, I was a little nervous. I was like, he's gonna be an asshole on the plane. It's just me. He was fucking awesome. Now, to be fair, he had an iPad.
An iPad. Right.
But it was just great. We went and did all these really boring adult things. My mom is moving, and so we got to do a lot of different things, and he was awesome. Anyway, the long story short is, whenever we have these weekends that are really fun, it was a 4-day weekend. It was just us. It was the best. That first day back at school.
Oh yeah.
Drop off is not cute. And I very much subscribe to, because of my experience, that when your kid is having a hard drop off, staying longer, more hugs, more cuddling just makes the problem worse. And it's better just to rip the Band-Aid off.
You knew that.
I know. So I'm just saying, I'm bringing it up because this morning I'm dropping him off. We had this amazing 4-day weekend, and I can feel it in the air. I can just sense it's going to go bad. So we put him down, and he's just like attached to my legs. And what I have to do, and it's just the worst feeling in the world, is I have to push him off of me and shut the door as I'm pushing him back through the door as he's sobbing, Daddy, I want to be with you. Daddy, please don't leave me. Let me come home with you. And then he said, screaming through the door, Daddy, I miss you. And like, what a fucking psychopath. Because not a psychopath, sociopath. No, he's a sociopath because he's fucking with my mind. Because that's hard to leave. But there's no other way. Me staying and hugging him is not going to make him calmer. So I literally have to like peel him off of me and
like underwear.
Him.
Like you're pulling your feet out of underwear.
Correct. And so that was a really that just never feels good at all. But yeah.
And anyway, you know, 2 seconds later, he was fine, right?
Hopefully. Oh, no, 100%. But it doesn't feel good to like push your son by his face back through the door that you're trying to lock so you can leave and go to Starbucks instead of raise your own child.
Listen, I have an episode of Gatriarchs I need to go record, buddy. Yeah. So, and it's going to pay for your college. So get the fuck off me.
Now, we've lost thousands of dollars on this thing. anyway, do you want to do your...
Oh, yes, it is time for the top three list.
Gatriarchs, top three list, 3, 2, 1.
Those dulcet tones, huh? So this week's top three list is the three things you hope your kid fails at.
That's mean.
But I mean, it's totally self-serving, I suppose. And this might, unfortunately, it has a funny title, but I think I'm going to be disgustingly sincere when I say number three is, I hope my kid fails at being a dick. Just don't be a dick, right? Just like, can we just not be a dick? Right now, we have a lot of dickishness that's going on in the house. And I'm like, can we just fail at this and move on? Number two, being popular. I want you to fail at being popular, because nothing good comes from being the popular kid. You know, you need to suffer a little bit, right? Number one, basketball. Please just don't be good at basketball, because I don't want to have to watch it. That's the sport that has traumatized me my entire life, because everybody said, oh, you're tall, so you must be good at basketball at a very young age. And I'm like, at nine, I was like, fuck you. I'm terrible at basketball, and now I hate it because you make me feel less than for being bad at basketball. So,
man, being tall has been just a curse for you. I mean, it's just been such a trauma in your life.
So I hope my kids fail at basketball. What about you? What do you hope your kids fail at?
We have a little bit of overlap, because number three for me is being a bully, which is kind of like being a dick, because I think they need to try. But I need to see them fail and realize that that doesn't benefit you at all.
Oh, in all of these cases, I want them to try, and I hope they fail.
Number two, I want him to fail at something he really loves. And I bring that up because I very much wanted to be an actor. And when I went to college, I went to a very well-known college for theater. And I auditioned for their program, and I didn't get in twice. The good thing about that, I mean, listen, it sucked, but the good thing about it was I kept going, and just because I kept going proved that I really, really, really wanted it. So if he fails at something and he doesn't go back to it, I'm like, well, he didn't really like it. So I think him failing at something he really loves. And number one for me, I hope my kid fails at coming for me. Do you know what I mean? Coming for the king. When he tries to outsmart me, that, like, what it was like 13, 14, whatever, like, boys just want to like destroy their fathers. I want him to fail, because I always want to be top dog. I have no interest in passing the torch to
never
anybody. This is my house. I pay the bills, and until I'm dead, then you can be the king.
You can take my toxic masculinity out of my cold, dead, gay hand.
All right, so next week, let's go back to babies. Listen, I have a 20-month-old, but I don't. That's not a baby anymore. I have no babies. We don't have babies anymore. But let's go back to babies. A lot of dads have babies, and let's go back to the top three baby products that are garbage.
Oh, all right. Top three baby products that are garbage. Do you think it's helpful that I repeated that?
All right. Our next guest is a mom. She's a dancer, a voice actor, and the host of our new favorite show, the Queer Family Podcast, which has a mission to normalize, elevate, and celebrate LGBTQ families. Now, it is basically if we were classy and eloquent and smart and thoughtful with like a little bit more lesbian than we have.
And
please welcome to our show, Gaytriarchs, Jamie Kelton. Welcome
Jamie.
To the show.
Welcome.
Hi, David and Gavin. I'm so happy to be here. And I love that you keep saying that my show is classy, yet you just had a whole monologue prepared about my show. I didn't do that for yours, the episode.
That's true.
But you did plug our show right at the top, so we do want to say it once again, over and over and over again. Queer Family Podcast. Jamie's like, you're like what is it?
Madam. The madam of the gay podcasting family.
I like that,
because
I was thinking like grandma for a second, but
you know what?
Well,
I was avoiding
saying
that.
You could be a gilf. You know,
I didn't want to make you feel old, but you will be a gilf, no doubt.
I don't know what that means. What is that?
Grandma, I'd like to fuck.
Oh.
Yeah,
I know.
Just a reminder, you're on our show now, where we talk disgusting.
I know gilf, like, because also, I just listened to that episode, so I know what that means.
Wasn't she fascinating?
Well, I didn't get to her. I just listened to your intro, to be completely honest. I haven't gotten to her yet, because I'm really into your – I like your intros, so that's fun. I like hearing about the parenting and the craziness.
Well, we can't wait to get corporate sponsorship from Disney, thanks to DILFs of Disneyland. But
get on it.
Yeah, but the GILF factor, I mean, hey, we all aspire to be a GILF at some point. So
yeah, come on now. But 100%. I'm not, let's be clear. I just want to be 100% clear with your audience. I am not a grandma. I'm not that old. No. Like, am I
sure? She's young and beautiful. She's young. She's the youngest of the three of us, to be honest.
I don't think so.
No, yeah, think I'm sure true. You are. But we're also super ageist here. And by we, I mean David, who constantly gives me shit for my age, which is not that old.
He's literally 4 years older than me, but I talk about him growing up in the 1800s all the time.
Yeah.
And for transparency, for those of you listening, we literally just now finished recording our interview for her show, and we were trying to be buttoned up. But I could just see in Jamie's face as we were recording, she was so desperate to be on our show where she could take her bra off and just let it all hang out.
It's already off. Yeah. But it's so funny because it's not buttoned up over there, nor is it classy. So I appreciate you saying that, but it's pretty much flying by the seat of our pants just to uplift and highlight our beautiful effed up families. Like, we're all ruining our kids. We are all doing that, just not for the gay reason, and that's the point.
Yeah. It's all in our own special ways. So for those of you who are listening who don't know, you host a podcast called The Queer Family Podcast, which we were talking about was – at the time, 6 years ago when you started it, was the first gay family kind of podcast that existed. And now, in a good way, there are more, right? There's us, there's you guys, which I honestly think are the top ones. The other ones are fine or great, but they're not consistent, right? They're not posting every week. And you see the kind of shell remnants of people who maybe tried to do one and then they just stopped posting or whatever.
Yeah,
detritus on the side of the highway.
Yeah. No. When we first started, there were a couple others who had cute names and stuff. And I was like, uh-oh. But they just really quickly fizzled out because it is a lot of work. It really is.
It is so much work. Booking a guest every week. I know your show, you have guests every week. You have to prepare stuff. There's money hosting. Anyway, who cares about that? We're excited to have you on our show. And you are a mom and a lesbian. So tell us everything. So tell us how you became not a lesbian. We know how you became a lesbian.
Although that might be a good story too.
That's true. How did you become a mom?
Oh, God. Well, I always wanted to be a mom. I did. And being gay never, like, deterred me from that. I always knew I would be a mom, figure it out somehow. And when I met my wife, like, it was supposed to – so I had been in this, like, long-distance seven-year relationship – not long-distance, long-term – why did I say long-distance? Long-term seven-year –
emotionally distant.
Yeah.
Long-term.
We were actually great. She was a stage manager. We were like, you know, we toured together. You know, that old story.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is – I see cliches coming out all over the place. And you were on the road and you bought a Subaru.
Yeah, it was it was a bus and truck tour, and we drove the set van. Oh yeah, we were like lesbian in it up, and we were like secret. Man. Yeah, so I was with her, Sarah, for 7 years, and we broke up. It was an amicable breakup, but I was like kind of on a rebound. I was like, let me try some things out. Let me have fun. I'm gonna have a little fun. I met Anne at a pride party. My wife. And she was supposed to be a one night stand. Like, I was excited. Okay. Let's do this. Here
that
we go.
That old story.
And then bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that old story of the U-Haul situation really did happen. By the time morning came, it was a done deal. It was a done deal.
A U-Haul and six cats, and we're ready to go.
Yeah. And that night, the long night, the long, beautiful night through the night, we asked each other, like, that conversation came up. Do you want kids? And like, that's how early on we start this shit, right?
Yeah.
And her response was actually, well, I think it's too late for me because she's 7 years older than me. I was 30. She was 37. So she was not correct in that assumption. So I had to do a little bit of convincing, but it didn't take much, actually. And so we always knew we wanted to have kids. And then we toyed with the idea of using a known donor, because we even had a friend, my gay actor friend, as you do, who we would ask, who, you know, we were really, really thinking about. And then in the end just decided, because it just would be too complicated, we'd have to get a lawyer and make sure everything was buttoned up. And we just decided, you know what, let's do what our best friends did and use an anonymous sperm bank. Use a sperm bank, get the donor, and do it that way. So she, the plan was always that she was going to have I mean, I was always, God, Jamie, I'm messing up my own story.
Have you been drinking? It's 10:49 a.m.
You don't know what's in, you don't know what's in this Starbucks coffee cup. No, the plan was always that I was going to carry. Mm-hmm. And then literally like the week after our wedding, we're sitting in a bar having beers like self-respecting lesbians do. Mm-hmm.
Coors Light in a can, I imagine. Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. IPA. Actually, no, she was in on Stella's back then. Anyway, the funny thing is I know like her, like I gauge years by the beers my wife was drinking at that time, which is very lesbianish too, I think. What was that?
You're muted, Gavin. He's muted. Gavin is logging into his AOL address right now.
I coughed a second ago and I was being very respectable, but I think I had many funny quips over the last 7 minutes that I've been muted.
It's apparently. Amazing how the funniest parts of him are always when he's muted.
It's so bizarre that works that way. But I am curious, what beer chapter of beeriness are you on right now, both of you?
Well, she's an IPA. We both love IPAs. Okay. You know, we're bougie like that. And yeah. I'll drink any IPA you put in front of me. I'm more of a wine drinker too, because I'm bougie like that.
Uh-oh.
But and beers I have, you know, when I've had too much wine. So she's drinking a certain brand that I can't think of the name of. It's an orange can.
That's right.
I just know that.
If you could think of it, maybe we could get some corporate sponsorship as far
as
that goes.
We should do that. Yeah, we should. I should think of it.
Yeah.
So you're at the bar, yeah. and she says,
you know what? I think I want to carry too. I do her like she's the most New York accent.
I was about to say,
world.
Is she from like Staten Island?
She's
Where is from she from?
Queens, and she gets mad. All right.
There it is.
And she gets so mad about my impression of her, but it's kind of almost sort of that way, but not really. Okay. I wait. I drew her way up. But
what's her impression of you?
Yeah.
She doesn't do impressions. She's in education.
She's a stage manager.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, that was the last. Sorry. That was the last one.
Yeah, but she didn't do impressions either. I like right. the dry. I go for the dry types.
Got it.
No, she's hilarious, but she doesn't do impressions. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, I think I want to carry too. And that put a wrench in the plans because she's older. Like she's 38. She's 39, 40. No, she was 41 at this point. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, shit. Now we have to do this. Now, and I wasn't ready. My career was popping. And by popping, I mean I was like working in regional theaters regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listen, that's
popping. I was like, this is not the time. I'm not ready for this. Yeah. And
there's an ensemble of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat at North Carolina Theater. I got to be in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. I had two shows lined up already. Like it was tough. But, you know, and then we had to start right away. And also, this means we're having two because I'm carrying a child. So everything got changed so quickly. And then I was so afraid of not having a biological connection. I made her like basically write a contract that she wouldn't change her mind that we were having two.
Okay.
No matter how hard it got. Like, I got a little cray-cray. A little bit. Mm-hmm. Come to find out that connection doesn't really matter, but I didn't know it at the time. And then, you know, she got pregnant, IVF, I got pregnant. And then when it was my turn, I had a lot of infertility. It took me 2.5 years. We had no idea it was going to take so long. And then that's why the podcast was born, because I was looking for stories like mine. I was looking to hear my story mirrored back to me. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And I thought, surely there's a podcast about families like ours, because there's a podcast about freaking everything, even seven years ago.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't. And I was shocked. And I just kept saying, somebody has to make this show. Somebody has to do this. And then finally I was like, oh, duh, I have to make this show. So let me make the show. And then I did. And then it turns out a lot of other people wanted to hear their stories mirrored back to them as well.
Your show does a great job of reminding us all that it is frankly a fucking miracle that any of us are here. And 100%. There are so many challenges, and especially in queer families, we think, I mean, David, I don't know if you felt this way, but we thought we had everything under control.
Yeah,
and there were so many completely random things that were thrown our way that you're reminded like, oh, I just need to take a chill pill and take a step back and, you know. You get the kid that you are supposed to have, but you're going to have a lot of detours along the way.
Yeah. parenting is no. in general is just out of control. Then you add the queer aspect to it, and then you know, then it's so out of our hands, the control.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same as regular parenting, just more like Mariah Carey and like maybe some more like Lisa Loeb for you. I don't know what is a
Lisa Loeb. Lisa, I mean, my daughter knows 32 flavors. You know, she can sing it. Yeah, a little Ani, a little you know, because I'm Indigo a '90s girls. Lesbian. Indigo Girls. Yeah.
Indigo Girls.
Nice. Obviously. Oh yeah, Indigo and Girls. Ani, yeah.
Ani DeFranco.
Tracy Chapman, you know.
Oh,
what do we think about the reboot of that song?
I liked it. I liked
it. You like it?
I liked it because I just love that song so much. It is a fantastic song.
God, I hope Tracy Chapman is making millions off of the
reboot. Oh, she better be, right? She better. I bet she isn't, though.
But that was something we were talking about with my husband upstairs literally during dinner. I was talking about how the moment you choose to ingest all the craziness and the moment you try to let it wash over you, and you always say, like, when two kids are crying and reaching for you and screaming and shitting and doing all the things, you're always like, I'm just going to let it wash over me. I'm just going to laugh. I'm going to think about myself at 80 years old, wishing I had this moment back. And then there's the times you physically cannot manipulate that back, you just ingest everything, and you're like, I'm going to push you off a bridge. Like, I don't know what to tell you. That was last night. To me, the new thing that makes me crazy is when the kids are like, I'm hungry for breakfast. I'm hungry for a snack. It's like, great. I will make you anything you want. I want peanut butter sandwich. Fantastic.
Yeah.
This is not how it goes, but I'm like, great. I'll get the bread and the peanut butter. I want it. Yeah. I'm making it for you now. I want my sandwich. Yeah. I said, I'm physically making you the sandwich now. If you don't shut up, I'm going to hand you to Penny, our mail carrier, and she's going to take you to somebody else's house because I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah. No, it's they do that. They take you there. They sure do. Now,
I am curious, in all of the interviews that you have done, it is not just a lesbian-focused a podcast, obviously. You have lots of queer families of all kinds. I am curious, over the years that you've been doing this, what can you say is the difference between gay dads and lesbian moms?
Ooh, okay. Good question.
You want to know my superficial answer that is all the stereotypes?
We're gay, so we're all about superficiality.
We love stereotypes. Like, yeah, marginalization. We love
it. Listen, the lesbians' kids are a hot looking mess, and the gay kids are much more buttoned up and coiffed. Now, that is a very stereotypical, you know, and it's superficial, and it's so fucking true. Like, it's true.
And I am a little more lesbian in that, like, I'll just grab whatever's on top in the drawer and put it on them. I don't even match it. My husband is like matching bows and shoes. You know, like, so you're right. Stereotypes are real.
Especially the girl children, or the children that are identified as female at birth. And they're still living that female life.
Thank you.
Especially them. They are really put together in your gay household. My daughter, like, there's this one story we still tell, me and Anne, because when Rose, our daughter, was like two, she was in swim class at the YMCA, right? And there was this other gay family, but it was gay dads, and they had their daughter. So it was our two daughters, same age, you know, and they would go into the guys' dressing room after the class, and we'd go into the ladies, and we'd always see each other walking out. And I kid you not, our child would come out of that dressing room, like, pants on backwards, hair all crazy, not brushed, still wet, like, just a hot, maybe had shoes on, I don't know, you know. And their little girl would have the ribbon, like, the hair was done. I swear to God, the child probably had makeup on, like, in the most beautiful, like, they were going to brunch right after, and we were going to, I don't know where the hell.
Well, we were likely going to brunch afterwards.
We were going hiking. We were going hiking. But yeah, and it's we joke about that to this day, because it was like night and day, the way we put our kids together.
And then do you feel like, going with those cliches, though, does that mean that sometimes lesbian parents are able to relate to their sons, their male presenting super masculine kids, more or any less? Or, I mean,
no, that's one of my things. Well, I'm not, because I'm super feminine, and I really do care about how I look and how everybody looks. I just don't, I don't take the time with my kids, I guess. Maybe I'm too selfish and I just put all the energy into me. I don't know. But no, this is one of my things, you know, when you're in a two mom house and you have a little boy, I feel like I am going to do him a disservice at every turn, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I second guess my parenting all the time because I'm not a guy. And there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that go into raising boys.
There is. And also, did you feel what I felt having a girl when you had your boy, where you were nervous about the genitalia? Because I was so embarrassed and ashamed to say it. And I could barely say it to my husband. But when we were like, we're having a girl, I was literally like, I'm afraid. Where do I? Why? I don't know. I may have minimal experience from high school, and shout out to my high school girlfriends. But like, I was literally nervous about the genitalia, but I didn't feel comfortable even asking the nurses because I was so embarrassed and ashamed. Did you feel that way at all?
And you don't want to be a cliche. They're going to be like, "Of course you know nothing," and you're like, "You want to overcome that." But
and of course now, three diaper changes later, I'm like, "I got it. I'm a vaginal expert." But like, what was this something that
I'm not a penile expert in any way? I had a lot of feelings. First of all, when I found out I was pregnant with a boy, I mourned. I was so upset. I was pissed. I'm very candid about this too. Like, it sounds awful, but I was like, I thought I wasn't going to love this baby. Honestly, like that sounds so fucked up.
No, but it's helpful to know because we all can have those feelings. There are times that I thought I don't love my child enough and it's normal to feel that way.
Yeah.
I have issues with masculinity. I have, with toxic masculinity a lot of times that's the soup we're living in. I have issues with all that shit. So I had a lot of feelings that I had to work through in pregnancy all the way up to the point where when I was giving birth, I was still very scared. Like, am I going to connect to this person? Obviously I have, and he is the light of my life. They both are, but like,
sure.
The feelings, whoo! It was deep, child. It was deep, and then, and then, the penis stuff. I'm still grappling with penis. I don't know what I'm like. And I happen to have one of those kids that his hand is never off that penis.
Yeah, that's called a boy. I'm still that way. I'm 43. I
swear. That's very relatable and universal.
And literally this morning, I if you walked up to my kitchen right now, you would see a bunch of hair bows and hair ties all drying because my son is now in the piss anywhere he fucking wants phase.
Oh yeah.
So he lies and says, I missed the toilet. But what he does is he stands on the side of the toilet and pees across it. And we had a big basket of hair bows on the ground.
Oh my God.
And I hear I'm putting on the shoes of my daughter, and I hear screaming from the other room, like, Emmett, did you piss in Hannah's hair bow set? He goes, just a little bit. It was like a bowl of piss. It was horrible.
Okay, but wow. No, my son hasn't done that yet. But also,
how old is he?
He's five. He's almost six. But he's in a house of women. So so there's many. I have fears that I'm fucking this little boy up because first of all, he's in a house full of women. He doesn't see any of us stand to pee. So I think he came to the stand to pee game late in life, to be quite honest. You know, because
which is fine. It's not gonna like screw him up for the rest of his life. He'll have to go to therapy. But that's what our job is. is to send him into therapy.
This is like a queer conundrum thing. My son recently. So sweet, but so fucked up. My son recently asked me in all earnestness, Mom, when am I going to get a vagina?
Because
that's all he sees, right? And it's funny, and it's also like, oh shit, I need more men in his life.
No, but I will tell you that my son literally tripped and fell the other day and said, oh, it hurt my vagina. And he's just repeating words he heard because he heard us say it to his sister.
And but it's a learning curve, and it's also this is what goes into like being same-sex parents and then having a child of the opposite gender, like so many questions I have, for instance, and also cleaning the penis. I'm like, that's a whole.
Is he circumcised or uncircumcised?
Yes, he is. And now I feel bad that we even did that, but he is circumcised. And then, like, that was a whole conversation. That was a whole
conversation. It was for us. I mean, we both have had boys, and it's like it even for somebody who owns a penis who is circumcised. I was like, we were really grappling with it. We were like, what do we do, and what does it mean? And you're trying to balance the medical with the social and the, like it's all like we talked about on your podcast. Like every everything is a decision for gay families.
And
it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we grappled with that. Then we ended up doing it. And then, like, the cleaning of it, you got to pull it back, right? And clean it. So, like, do you? Or no?
Well, I was going to say, particularly with us, when you are uncircumcised, that needs to be pulled back.
No,
but I think what happens when they're infants, it can mimic. Yeah. 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 There's cleaning. Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Here's the thing.
I think he's wound out. I don't even know. Like,
I can tell you as a penis haver and as a person who has seen penises and not afraid of them, it is still real fucking weird to have to clean your infant child's penis. It is weird and gross and uncomfortable. It doesn't get any easier whether you're a man or a woman or a lesbian or gay.
Yeah.
Well, I have to make him do it now, you know, in the bath. Mm-hmm. So it's like a whole, pull it back, Orion.
It's part of a process.
Pull back
and also,
your skin.
But I can't stop thinking about how you're saying he has his hands on his penis all the time. And I think it's very important what David said is like, A, that's called being a boy.
Never goes away.
And frankly, don't shame it. Like, he'll grow out of it.
That's the thing.
It's a tough balance. It's definitely a tough balance. But
because,
like,
sometimes it's like, You got to take your hand off your penis right now. Like, this is
Nana's funeral. Can you please take your hand off of your penis?
And so we do say it sometimes, like, do you have to go to the bathroom? Okay, let's not touch our penis now. But I'm trying not to shame him, but I feel like inevitably I'm going to penis shame my poor boy.
No, like, it's not shaming, because you're not shaming him for having your penis or wanting to touch it or pleasure anything. It's like, no, we are literally at a McDonald's. You cannot have your penis out. I said this a couple weeks ago, but my mom was here to visit, and I literally had to say out loud in front of my mom to my son, you can't pull your penis out in front of grandma. Like, I had to say those words, and that
pretty
is
sure
not shaming
I've said
him
those
for
words
doing.
Too.
I mean, it's just so crazy.
Now wait a minute. We've been talking about body parts, but I do have a burning question that I'm bringing up also from our conversation on your podcast, which is vagina versus vulva. Because
age-old
I feel like, listen, where we were growing up, where my kids were originally growing up, we were in a super progressive neighborhood. And it was very, people felt a way about the terminology, but you're vagina all the way and vulva's weird.
I'm all the way vagina. I've never said vulva until today with you too.
Yeah.
I don't say vulva. Wow. That's like not a word.
All right.
Well, vagina all the way.
Vagina. This is definitely not the flag we're going to start flying or anything, but I am curious to talk.
It's educational for me. It's educational for me because, like, so my daughter had like a special cream because she was having like a yeast infection or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she also had a cream for her face that was in a similar tube. So I got a marker and I wrote Hannah face, Hannah vulva. So upstairs there is a tube that says Hannah vulva. And now I need to scratch it out and put vagina.
I mean, you know what? When I was little, I had a nickname for it that I made up. Like, my mother was not one
Can't
of those,
wait.
Like, let's
Can't
call
wait.
It a kiki. No, I called it my tutu.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I feel like that makes sense.
But I made it up myself. And then my mom was like, it's a vagina.
So well, I'm glad she didn't shame you out of that. Yes, David, go.
I was just going to say, listen, parenting sucks and is stupid and weird and gross. But
so
tell us about one of the things that we love about you is that you are also from the musical theater stock. We have all kind of gone, kind of our tree has kind of expanded. Yeah. But like back in the day, you were a hoofer. Tell us about that.
I was pounding that pavement. I was at those open calls. Yes, I was.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
I was up at 6 a.m. in line. Yes, I was.
And you were Boston Conservatory, right? You went to the Boston Conservatory. Oh, you're like for real.
But I went equity like the first 3 months in the city. So, but you still had to wait in the lines for equity calls too.
Yeah, totally.
Those days. It's different now, I hear. I haven't done an audition in so long, but now you get to like sign up online. They're so pampered. These young'uns.
Yes, but the system has changed to where casting is mostly done privately in agent calls and private calls and everything.
Oh.
Those are just kind of shells of like that is
so not they're
an
not
easy,
really
like back in the day when we were auditioning. That was one of
job.
The doors you could go through.
You could
like,
be
I booked
discovered.
My first Broadway show in an open call in an ECC.
Yeah.
But then, but nowadays it's a little more for show because like when Wicked has their ECC, they're not pulling people from there.
No, they're not.
They're pulling people from there. You know what I mean? So
anyway,
yeah. So you were pounding the pavement and you did tours.
Sure
like,
I
yeah.
Did.
Tell us about your tour.
Oh God. I did. Well, I started out with TheaterWorks USA. That old bag. Yes. Uh-huh. That's where I met my stage manager girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And so we did theater works a couple times because it was just a fun life for us.
No doubt.
Because we just, you know, traveled in the set van together and we were like, we would like binge Ani DiFranco and Indigo Girls in our little set van, just the two of us. You know, the rest of the cast would be in the passenger van.
That's like the And you were having a secret romance.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't tell anyone. I wasn't out yet.
Have you been to all 50 states by now with all of that theater works travel?
No, I haven't. Because theater works, all the theater works tours, I did three. Did I do three? Or two? I did three, I think. They were all along the eastern coast. So we went all the way down in the south. And I think we went as far as like, I don't know how far west we went, but we didn't get past the middle of the country.
Mm.
So,
well, still, it's a great way to see the country, though. Have fun.
Yeah. 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 And then, you know, I did a show in Tokyo. I did a cruise ship for a couple years. And then I did just like a lot of regional theater, a lot of it. I never did the Broadway, but it's always there. It's there. I fully believe I'm going to get to it someday. So it's, you know, it's back there one day.
Theater is such a weird, like Broadway is, I talk about it all the time. It is a powerful, powerful, powerful word when it comes to other things, right? Like you've been in a Broadway show. Wow. Now you're legitimate or whatever. Right. But the people who are kind of inside the system realize that Broadway is not like a mark of talent or whatever. It is, you have to be a certain amount of talent, maybe a certain amount of experience. And then at some point you're just in this bucket and people just pull out at random. And I know people who have been in the business for 20 years who are more talented than anybody I've ever met in my entire life who cannot get on Broadway. And we all know people who are currently in a Broadway show who cannot sing to save their life. I can't even go to shows.
Like at this point, sometimes I have to vet the shows I go to because if I'm going to be sitting there pissed off, it's just not worth it for me. Like if I'm
keep in mind, Gavin has done multiple Broadway shows, zero talent, bone in his body.
I see that. Gavin.
It's all about fitting the costumes. Honestly, was my first gig was fitting the costumes. I am not exaggerating.
No, that's true. I was almost in Apple Tree with Kristen Chenoweth to be her body double.
I could see that
because we're the exact same height.
And they chose the girl with the brown hair. It's a messed up world. And I don't miss auditioning. And I miss performing because I stopped. Mm-hmm. As soon as my daughter, my last show was a chorus line. And it closed when my wife was 7 months pregnant. That was my last show. I stopped auditioning after that because I knew if I got a job, I would want to take it. And it would always include traveling because that's just my life.
Yep.
So I just stopped. And I don't miss that. I don't miss it. I miss performing. And every once in a while, I go to a show and the music will start. And I do get that, like, I get a tear in my eye for a second. Sure. And then I'm like, oh, my God, stop. This is stupid. And then I get it back together. But
many people ask me, am I done with performing? And I always want to leave the door open to say, listen, this is something I'm going to keep my equity card. And, you know, in another 20 years when I'm 107, there might be a role for a 107-year-old man to, you know, come creaking onto the stage at some point. You can always come back. But speaking of like that assholishness of that entire messed up world, let's talk about the messed up world of podcasting also, because you are still performing to a certain degree. I mean, this is absolutely performing, but you get to control it and you don't have to have full beat on. But what has been the best and worst of podcasting for you?
And obviously our interview was the best of your podcast.
This one is highlight. Yeah. Listen, I love it's a creative outlet. I'm still being an artist, which is great. And I do love being able to, I'm making my show on my terms and that is amazing. And I feel like I'm doing something that makes a difference in the world way more than if I had been performing in random musicals in like upstate New York. You know what I mean? Like, I am making a difference and it feels really good. Do you want to know what I don't like?
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Absolutely.
Bring on the negativity.
If you have nothing kind to say, sit next to us.
I've said it on my show to my audience. I am getting pissed off. And I just listened to you, David, saying that you want the podcasters off of your front lawn. Is that what it was? What was the
podcasting in general? I'm like, too many podcasts.
Too many. But yeah. For me, it's not that there's too many. I'm getting pissed off at all these celebrities getting these huge contracts to make these produced and beautiful podcasts. Yes. They're great. They're amazing. Yes. But it's making it even harder for us little independent podcasts to get traction. You know,
It was the same way in the commercial voiceover world where like it was commercial voiceover actors.
I also do voiceovers.
Like, why is John? I know, but that's what I'm saying is like, and then all of a sudden it's like, why is John Krasinski constantly doing Allstate or whatever? And then now there was no room for it. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. No. Right. Exactly. And so it just makes me angry because then all the sponsors, you know, are like, your numbers, you're too niche. We need like Rosie O'Donnell's numbers. I'm like, well, I'm not fucking Rosie O'Donnell.
Right. And this is Rosie O'Donnell is not you. She's not bringing what you have.
Right. 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 Although I do love Rosie. I love you, Rosie.
Yeah. Okay. Shout out. Okay.
She is my BFF. I have her number. I interviewed her. And
Nice.
And I've had phone calls with her and I text her sometimes and sometimes she texts me back.
Which shows that it's a true relationship.
BFFs shows that. Yes. Shows that.
Have to name names, but who's been the biggest asshole guest?
Oh. What you want to know another? I have a lot of pet peeves, but you want to know another pet peeve of mine? Mm-hmm. I've been podcasting for a while now. Mm-hmm. I do have a following. You know, we have a good audience for the genre that we're in, the niche genre that I get told we're in all the fucking time. And so I get a lot of pitches from PR agents for their client.
Oh, you're big time. You're classy.
I mean, it's not. It's not classy at all. You know, for their client to come on my show and sell their wares, basically, like somebody who wrote a book or somebody has a parenting coaching business or somebody who has like all these things, right?
Yep.
And they're trying to make money off my audience for free. They're trying to get free advertising, basically.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I also have no shortage of guests. People are write in a lot and want to be on the show because they want to tell their stories. We want to tell our family stories because we don't have an outlet to tell them in. So I don't have a shortage of getting guests. That's not one of my issues. But I was saying yes to a lot of these PR agents if their guest was aligned, if their guest was also a gay parent, and you know, and I started recently getting really pissed because you know these PR agents are so rude, and then they'd be like, "All right, here's what you have to include in the show notes." I didn't tell you were getting anything in the show fucking notes.
Oh. Yeah.
Excuse me. Like so much, and can you please and writing back once I say that sounds like a great fit, I'm happy to have them on. Let's do a pre-call, you know. Oh well, I need to know your numbers first. Excuse me,
came to me, bitch.
Exactly. So I got really really pissed. I'm getting so pissed at these PR agents. So I just came up with a plan that they're not going to get free advertising anymore, basically.
Good. Good. And you're the boss.
Yeah. And then I'm probably going to stop hearing from the PR agents. I think it's what's going to happen.
We can just trade our guests back and forth. Well, yeah. Who's a gay parent? Who's a gay parent that you've always wanted to interview but haven't?
Wanda Sykes.
Oh, yes. I fucking love her. I fucking love that one.
Let's tag team her, too. Huh?
Oh my
God. That would be great. We should do it. That would be amazing.
I've tried. She's very busy. Yeah. And also, she's one of those people I would be so nervous for. Like, I was so nervous for Rosie, too. Mm-hmm. But God, Wanda, I don't know. Like, there's others, too, like Brandi Carlile. I would love to interview Brandi. All of them. I want all of them.
Yeah.
I want to interview all of them.
Well, this has been fun. Like we talked about on your show, I could go on for hours and hours and hours with you, but we only have a certain amount of time. But I do want to end with one question that I like to ask everyone is like, how did you earn your parenting merit badge?
Oh my God, you guys. I mean, like I have thrown away so many poopy underwear in restaurant bathrooms. I have stunk up so many restaurant bathrooms with just poop all over my child. Mm-hmm. Like my child has pooped his pants in every public place possible.
Every Olive Garden within a 2-mile radius of your house has had your dirty underwear in it.
My son's dirty underwear have been in lots of garbages across New York City. That for sure. My son peed on the bus. Oh my God. My son we were on the way home from school. He was in pre-K. And he gave me this look. And I'm pretty sure there was poop involved too. And all of a sudden, I saw pee running down the aisle of the bus. Like, it was so much pee. And it was pooled in his seat and then, like, dripping down off the seat. And it was a crowded-ass bus. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone. And I tried to get – I had, like,
did people notice?
Yes, there was so much pee. There was so much. And then we were getting off the bus too at the next stop. So I like grabbed whatever napkins I had in my bag and I like sopped it up as best I could. And I'm like, as I'm walking out of the bus, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I just left the bus. It was so bad. And I'm pretty sure he had poop in his pants too. So that was slowly. There was another time we were walking down the street and pellets of poop were just falling out of his pant leg. And I was like, nice. Ryan, what is happening? I don't know. Just, poop came out. I'm like, why is it coming out of your pants right now? Just
little
pellets.
Rabbit pellets.
Yeah.
Why pellets. Are you pooping like a rabbit? Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, there's been a lot of that.
The bus situation was tough.
I have one question for you guys, though.
Wait a minute, do we allow this? Yeah.
Can I do that? You can cut this, but I really do want to know because you're your dads. We don't allow toy guns. Like, obviously, we don't allow guns, but we don't allow toy guns in our children's lives. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't do shoot. We don't shoot. We don't do pow pow. We don't do any of that. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very lesbian, and also like maybe I'm stifling my little boy's like natural tendencies because he
violent
is also
tendencies.
Yeah, well, right, exactly. But he is also just like he gravitates to that stuff. He gravitates to guns. He gravitates towards all the things stereotypically you would say. Oh, that's so boyish, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm worried that we're really like stifling a part of him, like his violent side, like you said. But we were just with friends this weekend who are all about the guns for their boys, and they have two boys, and it's a straight couple. They have so many freaking Nerf guns. They were like for the entire weekend running around shooting each other. Like there was a 10-minute argument from the brothers about who shot who in the face first. And it was like every cringeworthy, like Anne and I would just look at each other across the room like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like it's so much.
This
for
is
us
why
to
straight people should not be allowed to have children. I say this all the time. They should not have children.
Wait, so the argument of that the dads say of, well, boys will be boys and they need this and they need to get this stuff out. Like what are your gay takes on this? Because I came home thinking, are we doing him a disservice? Like, do we have to allow some of this? Do we have to do this with like certain parameters? Like what? How do we navigate this shit? Like, I'm really grappling with this. I don't know.
First of all, the philosophical element of all of this is absolutely my jam.
I definitely have
a podcasting hard on to be able to go down a deep rabbit hole of what about human nature and we should have a bottle of wine to talk about it. But I will say personally, my entire parenting philosophy has always been no embargoes and teach your kids to deal with the world that's around them.
Right.
At first, I'm sure my partner and I looked at each other like, are we really buying a gun? The first time we bought a gun, which was always a Nerf gun. And my kid, he went through a phase of like every single Nerf gun he wanted. And thank God they were kind of cheap. Like we never really went over $20, which was kind of nice because my daughter wanted much more expensive shit all the time.
Of course.
But, I don't know. It was a phase and he went through.
So you allowed it.
We are 1,000,000,000% anti-gun.
Yeah.
But anti-gun in life. Mm-hmm. But we kind of like got steamrolled. A lot of our parenting has been like, oh shit, we've just been steamrolled by our children. We didn't see this coming. They already have whatever nonsense it is that they wanted. And then it ended up not being a big deal because we didn't make it a big deal. I suppose.
Well, now at this point, it's a big deal in my house because because he's obsessed with them because he never gets to get them, right?
I think my kids are too young for this, but like we are so anti-gun. Like, I don't ever put me in charge. Don't ever let me be elected to office because I will take your guns. But our kids are too young, I think, at this point. But I think my philosophy is like absolutely not guns in the house. But also, like Gavin said, like guns exist in the world, so we need to talk about them. But I'm trying. This is so arrogant of me because I'm not there yet. But I'm trying to redirect all of that to like, okay, you want to be violent and hit people. we have like a stomp rocket thing where you put rockets down, mm-hmm. you like stomp and it shoots. Mm-hmm. And he loves shooting people with that. And that to me is like a weird redirect to where so it doesn't feel like I'm pulling out a handgun.
Yeah. And he has a bazooka instead.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. I'm just, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Blasting them.
Yeah, I'm giving him like a scientific lab so he can create a new super virus. No, but yeah. Like I am so anti-gun, but I also want to be like Gavin said, like no embargoes and try to just maybe help redirect what if there is a violent tendency. My son does not. He likes to wear fucking Elsa dresses and
sing Mariah Carey. That's what I was supposed to get. So, I was supposed to get one of those boys, but I didn't. I was like, you don't want to put a dress on?
This does remind me of I had a philosophy teacher in high school in college who was totally anti. I went to school in Boulder, Colorado, so super hippie.
Yeah, you did.
And I don't know that she was a lesbian, but you know, maybe she was. And she had a son, and she said, "We have no guns in our house." And then, meanwhile, we were talking about literally the human nature, the violence mm-hmm. in our human nature. Again, a philosophy class of philosophy and society. And she said, and then all of my children, my son goes to the drawer with all of my, you know, wooden utensils and whisks and stuff. And then, lays them out on the couch, and he says, "And welcome to my gun." Yeah. Store. Would you like a bazooka or would you like a Glock or would you like a 9mm? So you're
human nature. What do you do? And my son is he'll take anything. He'll take a pencil. Yeah. Mom, it's a gun. Yeah. I'm like, no, we don't do that. But
I think what we've learned is that our kids are broken and we should return them.
Yeah, there's that. It really is crazy. And then we sat them down and had a talk at dinner last night about how, yes, there were all the guns and this is why we don't really like guns and blah, blah, blah. But I agree with you about the no embargo thing. And like, there's only so much you can ban, right? There's only so much you can do. Yeah. And at some point, you need to figure out a way to allow them to figure themselves out, but also keep them like in check, sort of.
Yeah, totally. And that is always the struggle.
And I'm just shocked and disappointed you're not a perfect parent, Jamie. So we're going to have to end this interview because this is just not.
You didn't hear that from like,
classy.
I am perfect.
That's right. You're the perfect classy parenting podcast.
I drink wine.
You do. You drink wine. I'm classy. Thank you so much for joining us on our stupid little podcast.
Thank you for doing this.
And please, everyone, go check out the Queer Family Podcast hosted by Jamie. And we love you and thank you for coming by.
Thank you. I love you too. And I love that you're doing your show. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks so much.
So my something great this week is something on your iPhone. So the most recent update maybe, or maybe an update ago, I'm not sure, has a thing where if you take a photo of a plant anywhere, if you just swipe up one of the options at the bottom, you know, you can change the contrast or you can adjust live photo. There's a lot of options. Now there's a plant ID option on iOS and you just swipe up on your photo in your camera roll and you click on plant ID and it will say, oh, that's a, you know, geranium or tulip or whatever.
Wow.
It's fucking incredible. I tried it on so many plants and trees around my area. It totally fucking works.
Wow.
So anyway, that's my something great this week.
I mean, I knew that there were apps out there, but I didn't realize it had been
integrated. It's embedded in your photos now. Yeah.
I wonder what their mission in doing that is, to like just educate the world, or are we all that? I mean, I guess we do walk around in life thinking, I wonder what that is. That's very cool. That is something great. Thank you for sharing.
Something great is
a personal thing where I have recently realized that my two kids enter the shower like their biological dads do. My son turns the water on outside of the shower, right? Mm-hmm. And leans in and then crawls around the back of the shower after he's already turned the shower on so that he doesn't get the cold water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's very industrious of you. You figured that out on your own. Last night, I saw that my daughter, who is biologically mine, gets in the shower, turns the water on, flicks the shower and then immediately runs to the back of the shower and like holds her leg up so that she doesn't get sprayed for too long by the cold water. And that's exactly how I enter the shower. And that just made my day that they are following in our footsteps in unique ways.
And that's our show. If you have any comments, suggestions, or general compliments, you can email us at gaytriarchspodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can DM us on Instagram. We are at gaytriarchspodcast. On the internet, David is David FM Vaughn everywhere, and Gavin is at Gavin Lodge, avoiding cold water wherever he can.
Please leave us a glowing 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts.
And even just text us your actual review after you give us the 5-star review online.
And your dick pics.
Thanks. And we'll...
joke here.
You next time on another episode of Gaytriarchs.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.